From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it is time for Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. The proposal for a 1,200-mile pipeline across a large area of Kentucky is creating quite a stir in some communities. The Bluegrass Pipeline would carry natural gas liquids from drilling operations in the Northeast to processing plants in the Gulf of Mexico. In order to make the pipeline a reality, representatives of the Tulsa, Oklahoma-based Williams Company have been seeking permission to survey private property. While some landowners have agreed, others have denied access. This project is raising a number of issues in the Commonwealth, not the least of which is that of eminent domain, raising the question of whether a project like this qualifies for legal seizure of property without consent of the owners. Other concerns range from economics to environmental effects and general public safety. And yet another issue is the origin of these natural gas liquids, hydraulic fracturing or fracking. It's a means of obtaining gas trapped under shale deposits in the ground, and it itself is a controversial process. During today's, we'll discuss some, if not all, of these concerns. Joining us to begin today's discussion is Sister Maria Vissi, Service Coordinator for the Sisters of Loretto, joining us from her community's mother house in Nerinx. Is that pronounced correctly?
That's right, Nerinx, Kentucky.
Excellent. Sister, thank you for being part of us. Sister Maria has also overseen Mother House environmental stewardship efforts in recent years. And also with us is Tom Droge, Senior Communications Specialist with Williams, one of the companies proposing the pipeline.
Williams. Hi there. Thank you.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for being part of the show. Williams operates approximately 15,000 miles of natural gas pipelines across the nation. And at some point, Tom, we understand you may have with us Rob Hawksworth, the manager of land GIS and permitting on the pipeline project.
That's correct. He's here with me. We'll pass the phone back and forth.
Excellent. We appreciate you arranging for that. And Tom will be spending the entire hour with us during the program. And in a few minutes, we'll welcome Bruce Scott, Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Environmental Protection, and Mike Zoller, member of the Joint City-County Planning Commission of Nelson County, Kentucky. And we invite you, our listeners, to get on board with your questions or comments on this topic. Write to us at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Post your comment on the WEKU Facebook page. You'll see where others have done so already. Send a tweet to at WEKUEST, and in a little while we'll open the phones as well. If you're already on the phone, we appreciate you standing by and waiting for us to get an opportunity to bring you into the program. Let's begin with Tom Droge, the basics. Describe this Bluegrass pipeline for us.
Sure. I just want to give some background for your listeners who maybe don't know a whole lot yet about the project. We are in the very early stages of this project. Bluegrass Pipeline is a joint venture between Williams and Boardwalk Pipeline Partners. And Boardwalk, as many may know, have a strong presence in Kentucky through its Texas Gas Division. Texas Gas is headquartered in Owensboro, Kentucky, and employs more than 300 people in the Commonwealth. Together, our companies operate more than 40,000 miles of pipelines across the United States, including about 1,400 miles of existing pipeline in Kentucky. We've been building and operating pipelines for more than 100 years. It's a business we know, we're experts at it, and we're excited about the Bluegrass Pipeline project. Specifically about that project, it's approximately 1,100 miles long from the northeastern United States, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia to the Gulf Coast. And what's really smart about the design of this project is that more than half of the pipe is already in the ground. About 600 miles of existing pipeline, starting in Hardinsburg, Kentucky, will be repurposed for this project. The pipeline will carry natural gas liquids, or NGLs. These are primarily propane, ethane, butane. They are used for home heating. Propane, as you know, is used in your barbecue grill, and also some people use it for home heating. And then, for the most part, NGLs are used for plastics we use every day. Some examples: the carpet you may be standing on, the telephone I'm talking on, car parts, medical supplies, baby bottles. The list really goes on and on of products made from NGLs.
And Tom, why is this pipeline necessary? Is there already a method of moving these natural gas liquids from the wells and the fracturing process that's occurring?
Well, sure. I mean, it's no secret that the demand for energy is growing in America. Demand for NGLs is growing. And as a result, we need additional infrastructure to move NGLs. Bluegrass Pipeline will help meet that demand. And in the process, we're going to create jobs in Kentucky. We'll create additional new tax revenue for Kentucky. And we'll allow Kentucky to continue to contribute to the American economy. We estimate that about 1,500 jobs will be created during the construction part. We'll be hiring welders and skilled laborers. These people will be eating in local restaurants, staying in hotels, buying services and supplies locally. We also estimate that the pipeline will generate approximately $136 million in new tax revenue for the first 10 years to schools, towns, and other local recipients in Kentucky.
Give me that number again, Tom. I'm sorry, I didn't
remember. $136 million in new tax revenue over the first 10 years to schools, towns, and other local recipients. And we found, as we've been meeting with local communities up and down the route in Kentucky, that the local elected officials are quite excited about that. Landowners, we estimate between $30 million to $50 million in payments will be made to property owners in Kentucky so that we may purchase an easement, which is approximately 50 feet wide. The easement allows us to install the pipeline. It'll be, for the most part, 3 feet deep. That was a question we heard a lot. Is this pipeline going to be above ground? No, it's buried at least 3 feet deep. We restore the easement. People can continue to use the land. They continue to own the land. They can raise thoroughbreds, grow crops, continue to enjoy their property. Well, We're merely asking for an easement.
Let's get Sister Maria Vissi on the line. She represents a property owner, namely the Sisters of Loretto, and we know there's been a bit of an issue related to the possibility of the pipeline crossing what's called the Kentucky Holy Land. Sister Maria, tell us about your interactions with the pipeline builders.
Well, actually, my interactions with the pipeline builders have been very short, because the gentleman approached us wanting permission to do surveying, and we had begun to know something about this liquid gas transfer, and so we said no. And that will remain. I know there are whole other questions about the use of eminent domain, et cetera, but as you can see from the gentleman's presentation, they have looked into all these things and will have answers we've seen from the... For example, the Elizabethtown meeting that we went to, there are answers for any and all objections. And certainly, no one is going to not want, for example, $30 to $50 million in payments to not go into their pockets. From the very beginning, what we've said is that we're not making any judgments on anyone's decision to allow or not allow the pipeline to come over it. What we've said is we do not want it to come through our property because since 1824, we have been those who have cared for this land and made it productive. And we don't want to run the risk, because there are risks, of having that pipeline come through here. And so that's a no. Now, can we be overrun? We have no doubt that the use of eminent domain certainly could override any objections we have to this. Now, the interesting thing about this, what I think has been so of such a positive thing for us as educators, is that we really weren't aware of what this fracking thing was. And so I have in front of me about three big notebooks of information that we have collected, because if you are going to be in a conversation, you want to have a database. You want to be using the same information that anyone else involved in the conversation is using. And so as we look at this as educators, what's been interesting is the contact that we've had with other individuals who live close around here in our surrounding counties, and also personally, comments that I've had from all over the country. People have called me up or through the internet who express concerns about, and this is the part where I would want to use, and I'm sure I can say our community would want to use our energy, is looking at this whole use, corporate use of natural resources. Now, as the gentleman said, everybody likes plastics. You know, we use a lot of that. Of course, the question can all come up, do we use more than we really need? And so I find that this is going to be an ongoing thing. And it's not so much our conversation with this particular corporation, but just being in contact with people nationwide, both in our state and nationwide, on this whole question of use of natural resources. And as you know, that goes into climate. That goes into the whole question of, you know, why is there warring in the Far East, et cetera? Because it's still the use of fossil fuels, which are a non-renewable source of energy. And the longer that we keep with that old, as it gradually begins to wear down where it's non-renewable, we close our eyes to what could be the other creative possibilities for use of energy. That is long-term. And so what I'm saying is I'm appreciative of the fact that that gentleman came to ask for the permission, because it then opened us up to, as educators, becoming better informed about this use of natural resources and the whole fracking movement.
Sister Maria Vissi of the Sisters of Loretto, we had originally thought that we'd let you go, but do you mind staying on past the station break we're going to take here in a few minutes?
Sure.
Primarily, we were going to dismiss the sister because of technical issues, because we can't get other listener calls on the air. But I think we need to pursue this a little further with Sister Maria Vissi and Tom Droege regarding the sister's property and other issues. Of course, we will be discussing other issues of eminent domain and this whole concept of the Bluegrass Pipeline on this week's Eastern Standard. We invite you to get on board. If you'd like to call now, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we are discussing another complex issue, the Bluegrass Pipeline, this week. We know there's a lot of interest on the part of our listeners. If you're on the line, please stay on the line, and we will attempt to get everyone on the air. If you've sent us an email, we're going to do our best to get your email on the air. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. A number of comments posted on the Facebook page, and we're grateful for that. Hopefully we can share those on the air, but we do encourage you to interact among yourselves even beyond the live broadcast of the program. And Sister Maria Vissi of the Sisters of Loretto is on the line. Tom Droege of the Williams Company in Tulsa, Oklahoma, also on the line. And Tom, I'd like you to react briefly, if you could, because I want to get our other guests into the program here, to the sisters and their the concerns that they have raised and their objection to the use of their property for the Bluegrass Pipeline. Tom, are you
right? Yes, I'd just like to say that the use of natural resources is very important to us. We have talented individuals we've hired who perform some of the survey work that's required so that we can avoid environmentally sensitive areas. That's part of the process we go through early on. And just on a personal note, the environment, recycling, the way we live today in America, we are all in favor of alternative energy sources, and natural gas right now is something that we have a lot of, and we're in the, we may transition at some point in the future to other sources of energy, but right now, you know, the way we live in America with our population growing, natural gas is, and natural gas liquids are, something we need right now. And I just want to give a few quick examples. In Kentucky, for example, the Westlake PVC resin plant in Calvert City, which is in western Kentucky, is one example of an industry that uses NGLs, depends on NGLs, workers depend on those jobs. Auto parts manufacturers are another big user. Kentucky is America's third largest auto assembler. An average vehicle contains about 600 pounds of petchem-derived products. Those are NGLs, and that's wires, cables, seat belts, instrument panels.
Very interesting. I mean, Tom, it sounds like there are many, many uses for these NGLs. Let me just, before we need to let the sister go, how did your company react to understanding that you were, you know, facing opposition or at least some resistance from sisters and monks? I know the monks at Gethsemane Monastery as well have said that they will not allow access to their property. Was that a surprise? You know, all of a sudden you discover that you've got folks from religious organizations opposing your project?
Well, we approach thousands of landowners throughout these processes of constructing pipelines throughout the country. We encounter schools, private property owners, small businesses, churches, and we approach them all the same way. With our hat in hand, we ask for permission to survey. And for the most part, on Bluegrass Pipeline, people have said yes, and they've welcomed us on their property, and we respect their property. It's a privilege for us to come on their land and perform our surveys. Right now, we have more than 90% survey permission for the entire Bluegrass Pipeline route, and we're making progress in the easement process. That will begin this month when we'll begin sitting down with landowners on an individual basis to talk about their property and purchasing an easement.
Sister Maria, let me get Sister Maria back into the conversation. How much money could the sisters have received for the use of your property if you were agreeable to this?
I have no idea. And the conversations that we've had so far, as the gentleman just said, they're beginning to do those negotiations for easements. And so, and individuals also, those are individual easement agreements. And my understanding is, and having talked about this, is that people really kind of keep those things confidential between the individual and the corporation. And so, you know, even if it were a question of money, and we're, again, an aging community, we just at this point, and I would say that it's not just point, it'll continue. We don't want that on our property. And so
Is that on a religious basis or a philosophical basis or more practical?
Yeah, it's on the basis of having seen difficulties that have occurred with these pipelines, explosions or leakage, they're documented.
So the same concerns that many other property owners have expressed about the safety and environmental dangers.
Right. You take a chance, and we just do not want to take that chance with this property.
Right.
And we consider it to be a trust that we have. I know that sounds a little bit like, little dreamers, but this is very real to us.
Well, that's why you're in the profession that you're in.
That's very true. And, you know, we're kind of talking apples and oranges in a certain way, because the corporations, I understand their responsibility. Their responsibility is to their shareholders. Their responsibility is to their boards of directors. And they have an entirely different outlook on what the resources are. Now, would I respect the gentleman saying that environment is important to him? Of course I respect that. But then you look at what happens to environment with some of these processes.
Sister, am I correct that you've been assured now by Williams that your property will not be used as a part of this project?
That was a statement that came out over the Associated Press. We have had no individual contact with that, and I accept what they say if they made that public.
Tom, is that true? As Williams said that,
It's my understanding we are the route as it stands today is north of Marion County. And I'd just like to address a couple of things. Operating pipelines and transporting energy is a very serious business. We take it extremely seriously. Keeping the infrastructure running safely and efficiently is critical to the American economy. That's why we hire some of the best and brightest individuals to work on these projects. We have employees here who commit their careers to ensuring that these pipelines operate in a safe and efficient manner. The U.S. Department of Transportation's Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration will regulate this pipeline, and it will be monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The construction of the pipeline will require input and approvals from a number of federal and state agencies, including the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Kentucky Department of Environmental Protection, and the Kentucky Historical Commission, among many others. As well, there will be a number of local permitting requirements we will follow.
Tom, I want to ask Sister Maria for one more comment before we allow her to slip away and open the lines for other listeners. Sister, what further involvement will your community, the Sisters of Loretta, have in this issue of the Bluegrass Pipeline? Are you in organizing? Are you working with community groups and others?
Well, we're continuing our contacts with people in the local area, and we will follow the progress of this project. And we are certainly aware of the depth of the power, you might say, of these particular institutions and their history of use of natural gas, et cetera. So what we're doing now is just continuing to be informed ourselves and also to share with other groups of people in this area and nationwide who are continuing to, as it were, monitor this use of natural resources.
Sister Maria Vissi, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We really appreciate your viewpoint, and keep us informed about what's going on over there.
Well, I certainly appreciate, and I, you know, it's always been clear, this isn't just about us as sisters. We're in contact with many people in our area.
Great. Well, thank you again for being part of our program. I do want to introduce our guests who have made the effort to be in the studio with us this morning. And here in WEKU's Studio A on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, we have R. Bruce Scott, Commissioner of the Kentucky Department for Environmental Protection. He oversees the six divisions within the DEP, including programs promoting the protection of health and environment through the enhancement and protection of Kentucky's air, land, and water. Bruce Scott, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Also with us in the studio is Mike Zoller, member of the Joint City-County Planning Commission of Nelson County, Kentucky. Mike is not here representing the Planning Commission, but opposes the use of eminent domain for the Bluegrass Pipeline Project. Is that correct, Mike?
That's right, John. Thanks.
Thank you both for being here. We certainly want to carry on our conversation with both of you, and I think there's some issues that you'll both be helping us to understand as we move forward with this project. And Bruce, basic question for you once again. What is the state's role regarding a project like the Bluegrass Pipeline, and is that something that obviously it's within your department of the state?
Well, my department is in the Energy and Environment Cabinet, which would be the primary place where regulatory jurisdiction would reside. One of the questions that has risen over the last several months is, what is our jurisdiction? What is our role? And when you look at the pipeline itself, there are sort of three phases of the pipeline. You have the actual planning phase, the siting of it and where it goes, and then you have the construction phase, the installation, and then ultimately the operational phase. My particular department would be involved in the construction phase, which is related to the actual installation as it might relate to disturbance of soil, stream crossings, wetland activities, and things of that nature. I understand that the pipeline representatives have met with some of my staff about initial discussions on that matter, but that's principally where my department is, John.
I mean, from the point of view of Frankfort, what is the governor's position, or has there been involvement of the state legislature that you're aware of?
Well, there was a committee meeting recently where this was discussed in terms of what the executive branch, legislative branch role should be. The predominant issue that was discussed was regarding eminent domain and legal opinions that have been generated internal to the executive branch have suggested that the power of eminent domain does not rest with the pipeline officials because it is not a public utility. The pipeline officials stated in committee that they had a different view of that, so there is always the possibility of that being litigated. Whether or not the legislature would take up that issue to address it or not, we don't know in the 2014 legislative session, but it's clearly something they could do.
What about assessing environmental or safety impact? Is that something your department has done now, or what, when that occur, when construction occurs?
Right. The safety part of it has already been mentioned, rests with federal agency, PHMSA, the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration under the Federal Department of Transportation. They actually have the jurisdiction for installation and construction of the pipeline itself. So they're the entity that deals with that. The state doesn't have any jurisdiction at all at this point in time on those matters. Your other question about environmental assessment, there again, there is not currently at the state level a requirement to do what's typically called an environmental assessment for the whole entire pipeline route. So we have to deal with that as it's constructed and placed in on an individual basis, and that's predominantly, again, just to repeat, going to fall into wetlands, stream crossings, and things of that nature.
Excellent. Bruce is, again, with the State's Department of Environmental Protection, and that is Bruce Scott, Commissioner with the department. Also in the studio with us, Mike Zoller, a member of the Joint City-County Planning Commission of Nelson County. But again, Mike, you've assured us that you're not representing the Planning Commission. But has your commission been involved in any way, shape, or form with the planning of the Bluegrass Pipeline?
The only thing we've discussed would be setbacks and the possibility of requiring a conditional use permit where the pipeline is routed.
Setbacks is a logistical issue, just the matter where it takes place, where it's actually positioned. And
right,
stuff
it
like
would
that.
Be a safety, a way to address the safety issue where the pipeline could, say, not be any closer than 500 feet of a residence, and the conditional use permit would be tailored just for the pipeline, and that would put certain restrictions on certain aspects of the pipeline. Now, the problem is with the setback is it would put a limitation on the property owner as well as the pipeline. And at this time, we don't even know if this approach would be legal. So it's very speculative.
Okay. What about this issue of eminent domain, which is one of great concern to you?
Well, I think just about anybody would object to having their land seized against their will. Now, the pipeline company wouldn't characterize this as a seizure of property, because they would say that we're being compensated. But if you don't want to turn loose of your property for any price, it would be tantamount to a seizure. And that's a real hot-button issue for just about anybody in any location for anything. And there is a state statute that deals with this, and the governor, like Bruce said, and the Len Peters, who's a chairman of Bruce's department, and the Attorney General, Jack Conway, all say that Phillips does not qualify for eminent domain. So this leads me with the conclusion that perhaps they're using this as an intimidation factor, because they have already gone to landowners when it came to surveys and said, well, you might as well let us survey because we're going to come through here anyway. And if they're reasoning that they can use eminent domain is for that reason of intimidation, then obviously I would object to that.
Tom Droege of Williams, we're coming up on another station break here, but can you respond to that issue? How does Williams currently view the prospect of the use of eminent domain? I mean, eminent domain in general, would we not agree, is used for what? Building major projects that are government-originated projects? I mean, I guess highways and bridges and infrastructure, sewer lines and things of that nature. How does this project qualify for that potential definition?
Sure. Well, this is infrastructure. And let me just tell you that we've been approaching landowners, asking them for survey permission. And for those few landowners who have said, no, we don't want to grant you survey permission, we've gone around them. So we're making progress on a route. And for the most part, we have landowners who are willing to work with us. And in fact, many of them are excited to be working with us. You know, eminent domain is a hot button issue, and it's not something we would want to use. Eminent domain is an absolute last option that we have rarely used. In fact, our company, we've been building pipelines across America for many, many years, and we found in doing some research that we've only needed to exercise that route in a very few number of circumstances.
All right. Tom Droege is with us from the Williams Company. We have with us in the studio Bruce Scott, Commissioner with the Kentucky Department of Environmental Protection, Mike Zoller, who is from Nelson County, expressing opposition based on the principle and the potential use of eminent domain. We invite your comments, your participation by question or comment during the next segment of Eastern Standard. The phone lines are open. I don't know if we have a line open at the moment. 800-621-8890. So there is a line open, 800-621-8890. The email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post on Facebook, and at least if you post there and we don't get your comment on the air, it will be posted for others to see. And you can also send us a tweet at WEKUEST. We're going to come back after another short break and start interacting with our listeners with your questions and your comments on this week's Eastern Standard from the WEKU stations. That phone number, once again, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard from the WEKU stations. On a Thursday morning, the program is live. The show is also repeated on the Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. And this note, our friends at Kentucky Educational Television, KET, Bill Goodman and his program Kentucky Tonight will be discussing the issues of the Bluegrass Pipeline this coming Monday evening in a live call-in interactive program as well. So we want to acknowledge that and let you know that conversation will be occurring as well this coming Monday evening on KET. Let's start interacting with our listeners, and we have on the line Sonia. Sonia, are you still there? You've been waiting quite some time.
Hi, how are you all?
Very well, thank you. What's your comment or your question, Sonia?
I have actually four questions, if possible.
Well, let's see if we can, let's do them okay. One at a time and see what happens.
Sounds great. I'm a landowner in Kentucky and a farmer there. And according to the co-owners of the Bluegrass Pipeline, which is Williams and Boardwalk, it appears Williams has about 1,000 miles of natural gas liquid pipeline, and Boardwalk has approximately 240 miles of natural gas liquid pipeline. I'd like to just talk about natural gas liquid pipelines for a moment. The Overland Pass Pipeline, which is 760 miles of natural gas liquid pipeline that the Williams Company did, is the majority of their pipeline. And my question for Tom is this. Why did they complete an environmental impact statement for the Overland Pass Pipeline that looked at alternative routes, allowed input from the community, and had a great amount of oversight? And why won't you do, or why would you do, can you do the same for the proposed Bluegrass Pipeline?
Just to be clear, Overland Pass, that's another project?
That's a project that's already completed. It's their project that was completed, I think, in 2007, if I am correct. And it's a natural gas liquid pipeline as well. So they did an environmental impact statement for that pipeline, and I'm wondering if the same, why won't the same be done for the proposed Bluegrass Pipeline?
Tom Droege?
Yes, I'm going to pass the phone to Rob Hawksworth, who is with Williams. He's our manager of land, GIS, and permitting to take that question.
Very good. Rob, thank you for joining us on Eastern Standard. The question about environmental impact statements.
Sure, thank you. The Overland Pass Pipeline project was a project that was had a lead federal agency for compliance with the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and the lead agency for that project was the Bureau of Land Management. and the Bureau of Land Management's methodology for complying with NEPA, as all federal agencies for projects like this have to do, was to require an environmental assessment be done for the project. Their oversight was for the project on federal lands, and as much as possible, if we were able to do the assessment on private lands, then with the landowner's permission, then the project would be able to go ahead and do that. So as far as the Overland Pass Pipeline project is concerned, that's the reason why an environmental assessment of that nature was done at the BLM's direction.
Sonia, you had a number of other questions. Pick one more, and then we need to move on.
Okay. Have they ever constructed a natural gas pipeline of the size of 24 to 26 in diameters? And have they ever transported a natural gas liquid pipeline up to 400,000 barrels in the past?
Rob Hawksworth or Tom Droesch?
Well, I mean, I need to do some research on that question, but I can tell you that, you know, between Williams and Boardwalk, we have currently operating more than 40,000 miles of pipeline, both natural gas and natural gas liquids.
And finally, if they could touch on a little bit about Moss Lake Fractionation Plant, that's where I was aware that the Bluegrass Pipeline NGLs would be going in Louisiana.
Okay, and Sonia, we're going to let you go and get that answer
much.
As we open the line for other callers.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Folks from Williams, go right ahead, Tom or Rob.
Sure. The terminus of the pipeline has not yet been determined, but I can tell you that it will connect with facilities on the Gulf Coast, where it will be used to make the plastics that we use every day here in America.
All right. Thank you very much, Sonia, for your questions. We have a number of email questions, some of which are somewhat complex, so please forgive me if I choose the simplest of them in order to be able to get an answer that listeners can understand by listening to the radio. This one comes from Gina or John. Actually, Gina wrote from Woodford County. Has Williams Boardwalk obtained permission from landowners along the existing pipeline to Hardensburg to repurpose it for the NGLs, the natural gas liquids?
Sure, I can try to address that question. Boardwalk Pipeline Partners owns that leg of the pipeline, and they would be in best position to go into detail about that. But those easements already exist with those landowners. Boardwalk is in the process of working with FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to repurpose that pipeline so that it's current. It was carrying natural gas, and it will be repurposed to carry natural gas liquids.
Okay.
It's about 600 miles.
All right. This question comes from Kara. She says, I work with the Kentucky Student Environmental Coalition. We'd like to ask about the illegal surveys that have been completed at Kentucky State University. These companies claim to be good neighbors to us here in Kentucky. If this were the case, why have they been completing what she's calling illegal surveys, like the one done through Kentucky State's Research and Demonstration Farm?
Sure. I've read a lot about that in the press. There's been a lot of news coverage on that. We did seek survey permission on that property, and we did receive survey permission from individuals at the university. We've since learned that we should have contacted the state or the Commonwealth of Kentucky for that survey permission. We have not conducted any surveys on that property. We conducted surveys adjacent to the university property, and were able to do what we needed to do there. But we're in the process of working with the Commonwealth of Kentucky for that piece of property.
So our listener, the email writer, is misinformed on that.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't hear her entire question, but I would just say that we are working with the state to obtain the necessary approvals to work on the survey process and also the easement acquisition.
Excellent. We have with us still in the studio also Mike Zoller and Bruce Scott. Mike and or Bruce, do you have a comment on anything we've discussed so far with our listeners? And then we'll get back to the telephones.
John, I do want to say this that Rob did not answer Sonia's question about whether Williams would subject themselves to the same protocol in Kentucky that they subjected themselves to on BLM land in Colorado. And I would like for him to answer her question because he didn't answer that question. And the other thing is Tom mentioned that Williams operated 40,000 miles of natural gas lines in the United States. And we're not talking about natural gas. We're talking about NGLs. And until people see the difference between natural gas and natural gas liquids, we're not going to make much progress because natural gas lines do not equal in terms of danger and explosive capacity to natural gas lines. So
the contention is that the NGLs are more dangerous because of the fact that they are a liquid as opposed to the gas?
It's not because they're a liquid. It's the nature of the what they call wet gas. And I could read you
just the chemicals, the mixture of chemicals?
Part of it turns to gas when it meets the air. Part of it stays liquid. And I can read you something from some Williams information that talks about the hazard of a release. And may I read that to you?
If we can keep it fairly brief.
When NGL is released into the atmosphere from a leak, it becomes a vapor and may appear as a white cloud near the exit point from the pipeline, but otherwise it is an odorless, colorless gas. NGL vapor is heavier than air and will tend to stay low to the ground following terrain features such as valleys, canyons, creeks, rivers, and other low points. Igniting a vapor cloud of NGL could result in an explosion, causing injury, destruction of property, and death. But I would still like Rob to answer Sonia's question.
Rob, are you there?
Yes. And can you repeat the question for me again?
I think Sonia was asking whether you would subject yourself to the same restrictions and oversight in Kentucky that you were subject to in Colorado when you did the gas line there, the NGL line there.
Well, we're complying with the requirements of the federal agencies and the appropriate agencies that oversee this particular project. Each project, depending on where it's located and what constituencies and or regulatory authorities we pass through, is different.
Okay, you're not going to answer the question then.
Well, I apologize if I'm not addressing your question, but what I was about to continue to say was that the Corps of Engineers is the responsible lead agency for this project, and we are working with the Corps to submit our permit application, hopefully by the end of this year, and we are complying with all of the requirements that the Corps is establishing as the Corps views its responsibility under that same National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, compliance.
Rob Hawksworth with the Williams Company, working with the Land GIS and permitting for the company. Tom Droege also on the line. Mike Zoller of Nelson County. Bruce Scott, Commissioner with the Kentucky Department of Environmental Protection. Let's go back to the phones to another caller. This would be Judy on line two. Judy, again, thank you for waiting a long time. We're glad to get your question answered. Please go right ahead.
Thank you very much. My question comes from some of the material that was handed out at the Elizabethtown meeting. It says explosive detonations in the vicinity of Bluegrass Pipeline's facilities are not permitted, and it goes on with unless you do whatever. My question is, what is in the vicinity? Does it mean the right-of-way itself? Does it mean the landowner's property? Does it go further than that?
And what is not to be in the vicinity of the pipeline?
Explosive detonations. For instance, people, if you live in a place that has a lot of limestone, people who go to dig a basement may need to use dynamite, you know, et cetera. And, of course, we have a lot of rock quarries in Kentucky.
So you're wondering how close you can be with those kind of activities to the pipeline.
Yes, I had asked the question at ETM, didn't get an answer, called the 800 number, got a call back from someone who didn't know the answer, who said someone else would call. They did. They also didn't know the answer, so thought I'd go to the authorities.
All right. Tom or Rob from Williams?
This is Rob Hawksworth. I don't think either Tom or I are the resident experts with respect to blasting around natural gas or natural gas liquids pipelines. Normally, every state has their own blasting requirements. as to what how they want to regulate that. But as I understand the question, it's related to blasting. And so normally there would be a state regulation in that respect. We would have internal requirements that we would like to see followed. I don't have access to those right now, but really our first and foremost position would be to follow whatever the state regulations are for that.
Well, does it normally extend beyond the easement or beyond the landowner's property who funds? Could it affect someone next door?
I don't know about the state of Kentucky. I know in other states that I've encountered this, it's within the easement would be likely too close, I would expect. And the easement terms and conditions themselves would normally limit that kind of activity. But that easement is only about 50 feet wide. So outside of that easement, and depending on what the state requirements would be, that would be the landowner's responsibility.
Judy, thank you for your call. We do need to move on in just the few remaining minutes we have for this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. Let's talk to Andrew, who has called in. And I understand, Andrew, you are Executive Director of the Kentucky Oil and Gas Association?
Yes, hi, this is Andrew McNeil.
What is your association's involvement or your position on this pipeline?
Well, our association has paid very close attention to the discussion about this, and we have been involved in testimony in front of the legislative committees last week. And we've been trying to place the pipeline project into a broader context of the natural gas and oil industry within the state. For example, although this pipeline and natural gas liquids may be a relatively new issue to central Kentucky, the fact is that Kentucky has been processing and producing natural gas liquids for generations. There is a processing plant owned by a company by the name of MarkWest in Langley, Kentucky, that processes 300,000 gallons of natural gas liquids per day. And those natural gas liquids are transported through eastern Kentucky, through West Virginia, to South Shore, Kentucky, in Greenup County, where they are fractionated, and then placed on barges for shipment. So we believe that when we're talking about this, we want to understand that although these issues are new to this region of the state, there are regions of the state that have vast networks of pipelines. About 650 people in Kentucky, 650 individuals in Kentucky are employed working and maintaining natural gas pipelines. Your jobs pay about $80,000 to $85,000 a year. So we want to broaden the conversation. We want to understand this fits with the state's ecosystem, with the oil and gas industry within the state, and just try to add to the understanding of what this is and what it isn't.
Okay, Andrew, thank you. Thank you so much for being part of the program and calling in today. We are ramping down and wrapping up today's program. Let's get Bruce Scott back into the conversation, Commissioner with the Kentucky Department of Environmental Protection. Bruce, I understand that your agency will be, again, monitoring the construction phases of the Bluegrass Pipeline. When is that likely to occur, and how will you be monitoring?
Well, we don't know the specific dates as to when they intend to move forward with construction, assuming they are able to obtain the easements that they're looking for. But we've heard some indication that in calendar year 2014 that some of the pipeline length could be let for construction. The company would have to have permits in hand prior to starting that activity. And again, that is predominantly has to do with disturbance of sediment and soils to ensure that we don't have erosion that leads to impairment of water quality. It looks at wetlands and stream crossings. That's our predominant activity that we're going to be looking at.
Bruce Scott, thank you for being part of our program today. Mike Zoller, briefly, this issue of eminent domain, what do you foresee in terms of ongoing activity around that? If eminent domain is claimed and is beginning to be implemented, will there be some further action, maybe court action?
I think that's likely.
All right. With that brief answer, we will move on briefly to Tom Droege for some concluding comments about the Bluegrass Pipeline. We have about 30 seconds for you, Tom.
Sure. I just want to say that thank you again for having us. We are committed to being an accurate source of information on this project. We're also committed to engaging with the public and answering questions. We have a website, bluegrasspipeline.com, where people can learn more and submit questions. We also have a toll-free number, 888-336-3252, where people can call and answer and leave questions, and we'll get back to them in a timely manner.
All right, Tom, thank you so much. Also, thanks. Please extend our thanks to Rob Hawksworth. We've had with us Sister Maria Vissi, as well as Bruce Scott and Mike Zoller on this week's Eastern Standard. A complicated issue, a lot of conversation still going on, and much of that still going on our Facebook page, the WEKU page. Next week, we're going to discuss public radio, journalism issues, but perhaps meet some of the folks who are on the radio from a national conference of public radio folk. We'll be talking with you during this very same hour. It's Eastern Standard. Our associate producers are Andrew Moorhead and Richard Turner. Our technical director is Joni Franklin. Julie Tannell has been on the phones. I'm John Hingsberg, and thanks for tuning in.